Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th Canto, Chapter 8, The Churning of the Milk Ocean. Text 10. Tasya asanam aninye Mahendro mahat adbhutam Murti matcha sridh treshta Hema kumbhair jalam shuti Tasya asanam aninye Mahendro mahat adbhutam Murti matcha sridh treshta Hema kumbhair jalam shuchi Tasya asanam aninye Mahendro mahat adbhutam Murti matcha sridh treshta Hema kumbhair jalam shuchi. Vaishnavis. Tasya, for her, asanam, a sitting place, ananye, brought, maha indra, the king of heaven, indra, mahat, glorious, adbhutam, wonderful, murti matya, accepting forms, siddhik shreshta, the best of various sacred waters. Hema, golden. Kumbhai, with water pots. Jalam, water. Shruchi, pure. Translation, the king of heaven, Indra, brought a suitable sitting place for the goddess of fortune. All the rivers of sacred water, such as the Ganges and Yamuna, personified themselves, and each of them brought pure water in golden water pots for Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. Text 11. The land became a person and collected all the drugs and herbs needed for installing the deity. The cows delivered 5 products, namely milk, yogurt, ghee, urine, and cow dung. And spring personified collected everything produced in spring during the months of Chaitra and Vaishakha, April and May. Purport. Panchagavya, the 5 products received from the cow, namely milk, yogurt, ghee, cow dung, and cow urine, are required in all ritualistic ceremonies, performed according to the Vedic directions. Cow urine and cow dung are uncontaminated, and since even the urine and dung of a cow are important, we can just imagine how important this animal is for human civilization. Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, directly advocates Gauraksha, the protection of cows. Civilized men who follow the system of Varnashrama, especially those of the Vaishya class, who engage in agriculture and trade, must give protection to the cows. Unfortunately, because people in Kali Yuga are Manda, all bad, and Sumanda Mataya, misled by false conceptions of life, they are killing cows in the thousands. Therefore, they are unfortunate in spiritual consciousness, and nature disturbs them in so many ways, especially through incurable diseases like cancer, and through frequent wars and among nations. As long as human society continues to allow cows to be regularly killed in slaughterhouses, there cannot be any question of peace and prosperity. Om Ajnanatirmidandasya Gyananjana Shalokaya Chakshun Militang Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. In the morning before Ratha Yatra, the mornings leading up to Ratha Yatra, you are chanting the prayers Jagannath Swami Nayana Pathagami Bhavatume. And in one of the prayers, it is stated that Lord Jagannath, the ocean of mercy, Daya Sindhu, is the friend of all living entities, and he's accompanied by Lakshmi Devi, who appeared from the ocean of nectar. So this is what you're hearing about in Srimad Bhagavatam. But please understand that there's no question of Lakshmi Devi having some kind of material birth. She appears to appear from the ocean of nectar, the churning of the milk ocean, just like the Vedas seem to appear from the mouths, or seem to originate from the mouths of great sages. This is explained by Jiva Goswami in Tattva Sandarbha, that the Vedas are eternal. The Vedic knowledge has no beginning and end, but it manifests and remanifests through the mouths of the great sages. Just like, for example, during Kartika, we're singing the Damodarastika prayers, which are attributed to Sri Satyavrata Muni. Actually, the Damodarastika prayers are eternal, but they manifest through the mouth of that sage. So in this way, we're getting a completely different perspective about the origins of knowledge and the appearance of extraordinary personalities in this world. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Ajopi sanaviyatma bhutanam ishvarupasa. He's describing his appearance in this world. Although I'm unborn, I seem to take birth. actually, all living entities are unborn. But because they're identifying with the material body and mind as the self, they undergo the illusion of repeated birth and death. So, even ourselves, our existence in the material world is not factual. It's an appearance only. Just like sometimes you see a rainbow, the few times it rains in Southern California, you'll see a rainbow in the sky, and the ends of the rainbow seem to rest on the earth. But if you try to find that spot on the earth where the end of the rainbow is touching, you'll never find it. The rainbow seems to be resting on the earth, but it actually, that is not a fact. Similarly, we seem, as spirit souls, part of Krishna, we seem to be implicated in material existence. But actually, we have nothing to do with material existence. How is this extraordinary illusion maintained? Krishna explains that Daivyesha Gunamai Mamamayadra. Yeah. This material energy of it's his. He claims it as his own. Mamamaya Dratyaya. And also explains it's practically impossible to overcome. There's something enchanting about the illusory energy. Krishna's smile is unlimitedly enchanting. And the illusory energy is a reflection. So therefore, we become fascinated by this perverted reflection. Because it's the corruption, so to speak, of the original beauty of the spiritual world, the original beauty of Krishna. We see glimpses of that, flickering images of that in material existence, and we go mad chasing after it. So Krishna clarifies in Bhagavad Gita that you'll never conquer over that enchantment offered by the illusory energy unless you do things Krishna's way. That's why at the end of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna makes his proposal. Indeed, you can call it a demand. Sarva dharma prachaja mamekam sharanam vraja. Abandon all varieties of your solutions, your conceptions, your plans, and do things my way. In other words, shut down your plan-making factory and take Krishna's plan. This is actually a demand. And we might resent that. Who is Krishna to demand this of me? Abandon all varieties of my ideas, my conceptions of what is good, my conceptions of dharma, progress, fulfillment, freedom, individuality. Abandon all that, and Krishna's demanding that we take everything from him. How can he demand like that? But would you resent someone if you knew that they were demanding that you be happy? How can you demand that I be happy? What is this? No, you would love someone who demanded that you be happy and also who provided you the means to be happy. But we are so rebellious, we are so stubborn in our clinging to material existence that we get an attitude when Krishna demands that we be happy. When Krishna says, surrender to me, I'm demanding that you be happy in the greatest way. No, no, no. Who are you? But if someone gives us advice in our struggles through material life, I deal with a lot of young persons, and I hear the advice their parents give them, or parent, because, as you may know, in the first world, more than 50% of children are living in homes with just one of the original parents. So Therefore, I always have to change my language. Advice from the parent who happens to be present at home. There's one situation in Canberra, Australia. I was doing a program at the home of a well-off Indian gentleman who had been in Australia for maybe 15 years. And he had an 8-year-old daughter. And he told me how one day his 8-year-old daughter came home from school and said, "Father, when are you and mother going to live in separate houses like everyone else in my class?" Wouldn't it be so cool to spend one weekend at mother's house and one weekend at father's house? All everyone in my class is like that. I'm the only one in my class who is, in other words, behind the times. So anyway, the advice from the parent who happens to be present, at best these days, is usually, especially in secular homes, "Dear, just follow your dream. Just be happy your way. We'll support whatever your program is for enjoyment. Just do it your way. Be happy your way." So, people today consider that kind of advice to be very progressive, liberal, understanding, indeed compassionate. In the wishy-washy conception of child raising, you're supposed to just let the child just roam freely, do whatever the child wants. And in that way, as the child grows up, the child can be guided by his or her own intuitions. And in this way, the child finds fulfillment, supposedly. So, because these kind of conceptions dominate our consciousness and subconsciousness, we feel this resentment when Krishna demands us to be happy. Why doesn't Krishna tell us, "Oh, just follow your dream"? Where's that verse in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, "Just be happy in your own way. We'll support you, dear"? You don't find any such verse. Instead, you find the authoritative demand of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Be happy, and this is how you do it. To accept that demand of Krishna requires some piety, some good fortune. But in this age of Kali, who has that piety, who has that good fortune? Even in India, there's so much confusion about who is Krishna. Therefore, Krishna comes, as you know, as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and gives what only Krishna can give. He gives the attraction to Krishna, to persons who couldn't care less about Krishna, who know nothing about Krishna. Thinking of the book distributors here, Vijay Prabhu, I don't know if Rigupati Prabhu is here, the others. Sachitunar. I'll tell you a fantastic story that I just heard last week. When one young lady was taking initiation, I asked her, "So how did you come to bhakti?" Usually I know, but in this case I had forgotten to ask the person. So she told me that she was a Beatles fan. So one day she wandered into one of those old record stores that sell vinyl records, you know, collector's items, and you know how people, they call it, they like to go retro. They're tired of squeezing material pleasure out of new things. So then they make it a hobby to get into old things. It's going retro. So she walked into the vinyl record store and was thumbing through some Beatles stuff. And there was the critical. God is the Fortune album. Sometimes it's called the Radhakrishna Temple album. Sometimes it was called the Goddess of Fortune album. So in this case, it was Goddess of Fortune. So she took it home because she saw, oh, it's produced by George Harrison. And she played it, and it had this tune on it, the Hare Krishna mantra, that caught her mind. She had no idea about anything to do with Krishna. She's from a very small rural city known as Toronto. Didn't have a clue. What is the Hare Krishna mantra? What is Krishna? Who are the Hare Krishnas? But she just liked the tune, so she just kept playing it over and over again. This Goddess of Fortune album. And then she would go to parties and rave and drink it up with her friends. And she, in the midst of the party delirium, she would say, hey, I've got a tune for you, a smash hit. And she would start chanting, she'd start singing the Hare Krishna mantra and get all the drunken partygoers to sing Hare Krishna. No one knew what it was. Every party she would go to, she would, hey, let's sing that song. And everyone had their glasses, alcohol in their hands, and they would just sing Hare Krishna. That went on for a while, because she was a party girl. So every weekend it was like that. Still, she knew nothing about who is Krishna, what is Krishna, Krishna devotees, Krishna temple, nothing. Although she's living in a city of 4 million people. So one day she was walking along the street, and in the center of Toronto, thousands of people walking on the streets, and she didn't know it, but she was walking by one devotee in Toronto who does outreach, Mangalarti Mataji. She's visited here in LA sometimes, I think Savasru. She runs a outreach bhakti lounge in Toronto. So the Mataji was trying to distribute a book to an Indian gentleman. And the Indian gentleman was, I know everything about Krishna. I don't need this. I am knowing. I don't need. Going on and on like that. And to prove that he knew about Krishna and therefore he didn't need the book, he started chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. You see, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Hare Hare. I'm knowing. But as he was chanting, this girl was walking by. What's that? That's my song. That's my tune. So the girl approached the book distributor and said, he was saying that tune. Do you know anything about it? And that way she bought a Bhagavad Gita. Now she's an initiated devotee. So, this is how Lord Chaitanya's mercy works in the age of Kali. I think I told you another story. Maybe I didn't. About the auto worker from Cleveland? Oh, this is funny. He's a tall, urban-type guy, African-American guy, talks in slang or what is considered to be normal in certain parts of the city. And probably, I suspect, many of our book distributors wouldn't stop someone like that. Because he's big and strong and tall and didn't look educated. So he was down in Arkansas visiting his mother-in-law. And he woke up 8 o'clock one morning, and he looked up ahead. And as soon as he opened his eyes, you see, there was a shelf of books over his head, and there was a book with a very funny name. So he was telling me, I thought, what is this, man? I can't even pronounce the name of that book. I was laying in bed when I opened my eyes. And I I saw this book with a strange name. Srimad Bhagavatam. So I decided to reach up and pull down that book as I was laying in bed. It was the second canto, part one. And I just started reading and reading. I thought, this stuff is pretty good. I couldn't understand a lot of it, but wow, I never read anything like that in my life. Anyway, he put the book back on the shelf and got up, went about his affairs, and then drove back to Cleveland from Arkansas all the way back to Cleveland. But in Cleveland, he said, I couldn't get that book out of my mind. So 6 months later, when he went back to visit his mother-in-law, he saw. Once again, when he woke up in the morning, there was that book. So he started really reading it. And then when he got back to Cleveland, he thought, I want more books. So he contacted mail order, BBT mail order in Los Angeles, and got more books, even became a life member through the mail. So then he was just reading the books at home, never had any contact with devotees. Mail order in Los Angeles sent him the address of a temple, but the temples in Cleveland were appearing and disappearing all the time. And, you know, he was an assembly line worker going to, at some auto parts factory, going to work at 6 o'clock in the morning. And so one day he was driving to work, and he happened to go by the latest location of the temple. He didn't know it, though. But he saw these devotees, like 6 o'clock in the morning, and they were dressed as devotees. And so he didn't know, but he thought, maybe there's some relation. They look like, sort of like the pictures I saw in the book. So he stopped his car, and he ran up to the devotees. Yo, brothers, yo! Are you the Bhagavatam people? So yes, yes, that's us. He said, because by that time he was like in the fourth canto, the Bhagavatam. So they said, you know, this is our temple here. You know, we just moved here, and why don't you come to our 4:30 service? 4:30 service. What y'all do that time in the morning? We dance and chant. Wow, your party at 4:30 a.m.? He was really impressed. Dancing at 4:30 a.m., that's when you start. So he would start on his way to work. He would leave earlier and go to Mangal Arctic at 4:30. And then, as what often happens, sometimes anyway, in the Hare Krishna world, the temple closed and they didn't tell him where they were moving. And so he was out of luck again. But he kept on with his reading, and a few months later he was walking down the street. He's a big, tall guy, strong, you know, assembly line worker. And he had a jacket that he had devised for himself, with Hare Krishna on the back of the jacket. So he was walking down the street, and all of a sudden this car starts following behind him, right next to the curb. So he's thinking, what's going on here? Some kind of hitman or something? I didn't do anything. I haven't done anything wrong. Car kept following along. And finally, so he stops. He turns around to face the car. And one devotee from Cleveland leans out the window. I see the back of your jacket. It's Hare Krishna. Are you into that? He said, yeah, that's me. I'm into Hare Krishna. And then the devotee from Cleveland told, well, we got some good news for you. There's a bad brother coming to town. His name is Bhakti Tirtha Swami. He's a bad brother. Why don't you come to the gathering? So he came. And, of course, he got into the bhakti process. And he started, you know, chanting japa, following the four rules. And so he had this bright idea at work. He worked in a big auto assembly plant, and the walls were caked with grease. The ceiling was about as high as, he told me, the ceiling here. And the walls were just totally greasy. So he decided to get a ladder and put and write in big letters through the grease, Hare Krishna. Huge letters. And so he did that. Then he said, after a while, the boss got a bit angry. What's this strange stuff on the walls? And in order to get rid of the Hare Krishna on the walls, the boss had to arrange that all the walls would get cleaned. But what happened was it was another assembly line worker, a lady. And she was wondering, what is this Hare Krishna on the walls in Greece? And then what's more, the devotee started putting notices on the bulletin board where information for all the shifts was contained. Things that went wrong during the preceding shift, and so on and so forth. He would put Bhagavad Gita verses on the board. So the woman was checking out the bulletin board, too. What are all these strange messages? Who's putting this on the bulletin board? And then someone pointed her to him. And she was in her 40s, and she was a single lady. She was interested in spiritual life, and she was interested in having a husband, too, who was spiritual. So they used to pass each other during the changing of the shifts. And she would say Hare Krishna to him. He would say Hare Krishna to her. And then one day she had a bright idea. She walked by him at 6 a.m. because she was on the night shift. He was on the morning shift. And as she walked by him, she said, "Hey, husband, Hare Krishna, how you doing?" "Husband, I didn't see you at my house yesterday. How could you be my wife?" He said, "Well, maybe we could do something about that." So he said, "Okay, we're having a program tonight. Why don't you come for that?" So she came to the program, and eventually they married, and they've been together for like 20 years. All from one book. So that is real fortune. And this is Krishna's demand that we become edgy about. He's saying, "I demand that you be happy. I demand that you get the best. How could you resent such an offer?" But it's the nature of conditioned life that indeed we resent such an offer. We don't know what good fortune is. A technical point about Lakshmi Devi appearing from the churning of the ocean, the milk ocean, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that actually there are two forms, because you may be wondering, what are the demons seeing and what are the devotees seeing? The demons are seeing the form of Lakshmi representing material wealth and opulence. The devotees are seeing the Lakshmi Devi who rests on the bosom of Narayan. Beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. You see what you're qualified to see. Just like, remember, earlier, as we hear about the churning of the milk ocean, different things came out. And unless you had guidance or unless you had higher intelligence, you could be bewildered by some of the things that come out of the milk ocean. The apsaras came. And Prabhupada describes in his embellished translations that the apsaras are the prostitutes of the heavenly planets. They came out of the milk ocean. Remember, we talked about yesterday how a brilliantly white horse, Uchchaishrava, came out of the milk ocean. And Indra would naturally want such a beautiful horse, but he backed off because the Supreme Personality of Godhead had told him, just give that one a miss. And the acharyas explained that Supreme Personality of God had told him that because he wanted that the demons get the horse and get really proud of their opulence. And then later you'll hear, as we discussed yesterday, how Varuni, the goddess for the drunkards, she comes out of the ocean of milk. And in that way, the demons felt encouraged because they were very depressed and bewildered why Lakshmi Devi was not glancing at them. So you have to know what you're doing in this world. And therefore, when Krishna says surrender to him, he's giving you the best program for how to live in this world properly and also how to attain the spiritual world. It's all rolled into one. The best program for material lifestyle and development in your redevelopment in your constitutional position with Krishna. But we take it as an unreasonable demand, or else it's impractical. We have that pride. Well, I hear what Krishna is saying, but, you know, we live in the real world. What are we going to do? But are you sure you live in the real world? When you're reading Bhagavatam and hearing about all these incredible incidents, your conceptions of what is reality expand so much, and you start to understand, I really don't know what's going on. We spoke yesterday about how naturally everyone wants to be wealthy, everyone wants to be prosperous, everyone wants social respectability. Therefore, Krishna sometimes has his devotees apparently in difficulty to show you what is the real wealth. Just like Kolabecha Sridhar. An ordinary person looking at Kolabecha Sridhar in Chaitanya Leela would see someone so poverty-stricken, trying to eke out the barest income by selling banana stems, banana leaves, banana bark. And even with the most meager income, Kolabecha Sridhar is offering, he's spending half of his profits on worshipping the Ganga. Yet, it was to him that Lord Chaitanya came personally to buy the products that Nimai Pandit wanted. Because this is in Navadvipa. Kolabecha Sridhar was known throughout Navadvipa as offering a fair price the first time you asked him. This is uncommon, as you know, even in India these days. He would say exactly what the fair price was. But Lord Chaitanya would argue with him. Why are you selling your goods so expensively? They would argue for 2 hours, the Shastra said. Even they would start wrestling with each other as Lord Chaitanya would grab his banana items and try to take them away, and Kolabecha Sridhar would try to get them back. Lord Chaitanya would tell him, as Nimai Pandit, you're a rich man. Why are you trying to sell your product so high? You're a rich man. You don't need the money, in other words. Rich man? How could Kolabecha Sridhar be rich? He was so dirt poor, as we would say. Yet Lord Chaitanya kept insisting, you're a rich man. Kolabecha Sridhar would try to defend himself. Look. If you don't like the price I'm asking, why don't you go to another banana dealer? And Lord Chaitanya said, no, you are my supplier. I'm sticking with you. In other words, Lord Chaitanya is saying that I'm attracted to the bhakti. I don't need anything from a person unqualified with bhakti. You have what I want. You have the bhakti. Kolabecha Sridhar didn't know that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He just knew this Nimai Pandit, this Brahmana boy, is so unlimitedly attractive. So while they were arguing and wrestling and trying to take the banana products and snatch them back, Kolabecha Sridhar is looking in Lord Chaitanya's beautiful face. And he's so overwhelmed by the beauty that he finally gives in. Okay, take whatever you want. Even take it for free. But Lord Chaitanya wasn't finished. Just to rub it in more, he said, you don't know who I am. I know. Here you are masquerading that you're poor, but you spend your money on the Ganga. Don't you know I'm the father of the Ganga? Let me just cover it. Vishnu. In this way, they would go on like that. So during Lord Chaitanya's revealing the Mahaprakash and offering benedictions to all the devotees for such an extended period of time. He asked, bring Kolavacha Sridhar. And he came before Lord Chaitanya. The devotees brought him. And there he could see the real truth about Nimai Pandit in all his transcendental splendor and opulence. And Lord Chaitanya told him, remember all those times we wrestled and argued and haggled over the price? Now you ask from me whatever you want. Ask for me whatever benediction you want. And Kolavacha Sridhar replied, I would just like to be able to chant the Hare Krishna mantra. Lord Chaitanya told him, I want to give you the 8 mystic perfections, the Ashta Siddhi. I want to make you an emperor, a king. Well, we have done that. We'll take that and the holy name too. What was Kolavacha Sridhar's response? That Brahmana boy who I always argued with, who tried to snatch my banana products, may I be his servant eternally. That's the only benediction I want. So the question is, why the poverty that Kolavacha Sridhar lived in? The Shastra explains that it's deceptive, that actually the distresses of a devotee, of a real devotee, are external. Within the package of those external distresses, the devotee is spiritually situated. So sometimes Krishna puts a devotee in such situations to show the triumph of bhakti over all material circumstances, all material considerations. Kolavacha Sridhar had no money. He had no education. He didn't have any of the material opulences. But Lord Chaitanya was so attracted to his offering, his bhakti, that he would come and snatch the banana products, showing, if there's bhakti, I'll take it, as opposed to taking what the richest person offers with such materially contaminated motives. So in this way, in this Gaura Lila, Lord Chaitanya is establishing what is real wealth. And also he's showing that don't think that such a established devotee is actually suffering. At night, Kolavacha Sridhar would call out the holy name of the Lord so loudly, but his atheist neighbors thought, he's feeling hunger pangs. That's why he's making all that racket. They couldn't understand him. And this shows that we have to be very careful when looking at devotees' situations. We need to be able to see through the eyes of transcendental knowledge. Otherwise, we make totally misunderstand. The Shastra makes the point that Kolavacha Sridhar didn't have money, he didn't have followers, and he didn't have erudite knowledge in the ordinary sense. He simply had the Supreme Personality of Godhead coming to him, attracted by his bhakti, to snatch his products. So the lesson that we can take from this, the takeaway, is that don't be bewildered by the external circumstances of such a devotee. And this is what we're aspiring for. We may say, oh, but Kolavacha Sridhar, that's far beyond us. But we can make progress gradually according to our capacity. And if we try according to our capacity, certainly Krishna, especially Krishna as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, will help us without a doubt. He'll help us to fulfill Krishna's demand that you must be happy. Do what I say, and you'll be completely happy. Lord Chaitanya will help us to accept Krishna's demand that we be happy. Are there any comments or questions? Yes, of our spirit.
Thank you for a wonderful class, Maharaj. I guess I was thinking in terms of, like, if you take a look at Krishna's pastimes, generally speaking, he was surrounded by pretty much wealthy individuals, of aristocratic family, power, lots of opulence. And even if you take a look at the lifetime of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, basically his preaching efforts were, I mean, according to reading the Chaitanya Charitamrita, most of the associates of Lord Chaitanya were very erudite scholars and wealthy people, for that matter. So how does that fit in the idea of Krishna consciousness? I mean, should a devotee, because, you know, even in the Christian faith, there's this idea that if you surrender to Jesus, you know, you'll have everything that you need. And you'll be, you know, sufficiently supplied, all the necessities and beyond, according to your surrender. So in terms of Krishna consciousness, how do we relate, or how do we try to induce those of high caliber, erudite positions of the material world?
It's a good question. I remember in my material arrogance and demoniac mentality, the first time I saw devotees was on television. One of them was Jayadwaita Maharaj. And I was in my last month at an extraordinarily puffed up university. And I turned on the TV to get relief from studying for my finals. My roommate and I, we turned on the TV, and there we saw these devotees. And we listened to what they were saying. Strange. All about purity and following those rules. And we couldn't believe our ears. So in my state of puffed upness and arrogance, I turned to my roommate and said, "These people are fools. They have missed the goal of life." I heard that they kept using the word Ananda. I learned it real quick. I said, "They talk about Ananda. We'll invite them to one of our parties. We'll show them what Ananda is." What happened? 8 months later, I was in the Brahmacharya Ashram. What happened is I met a book distributor the next month. So, it's not that all persons with material, some sort of material opulence, think that they're completely happy. You can't be fooled by the exterior. You've got to know how to get past that hard shell, that pretense, the facade. And don't be intimidated by it. Humility will get you past it. There's many ways that you can maneuver past their shell that they're showing you. I'm successful. I'm happy. I know what I'm doing. If you get bewildered by that, you'll be ineffective. But if you see through the eyes of transcendental knowledge, you know that they're suffering in spite of the front that they show. You're speaking about Gaur Lila. Actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur points out that Rupa and Sanatan were actually in material distress. They were under the thumb of the Nawab. So you might say, oh, they were rich, they were famous, they were smart, scholarly. But from another point of view, they were in distress. The same with Raghunath Das. Wow, if I could be born in a rich family like Raghunath Das. But his family had political problems. His uncle and father got in trouble. And Raghunath Das had to scheme to get them out of trouble. So, you know, it depends on your perspective. Yes, Lord Chaitanya dealt with persons who were erudite and prestigious. Then he told Nityananda Prabhu, Sripad, you can do a task even I can't do. Go to Bengal and deliver everyone. Lord Chaitanya is telling him that I want you to deliver everyone, no matter what their social status, no matter what their income level. And that was Nityananda. He's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's emissary for dragging everyone to Gauranga's lotus feet. Then, of course, in terms of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there's Haridas Thakur. He's born in distressed circumstances. But even if you consider that Rupa and Sanatan were wealthy, Raghunath Das was wealthy, still they were in distress. So the different perspectives you can take. Anything else?
If I may, I just wanted to add a little bit to the question or what you had said to Suhas Prabhu. In my line of business, I've dealt with a lot of successful people, billionaires and professionals, athletes, musicians, and I find that what they are on the screen or what they are on the stage is a lot different than what they are when they're behind the scenes. And I don't know if you know what I do. I drive limousines. And so I've interacted very closely with a lot of these personalities. And so often, you know, taxi cab confessions, you know, people get in the back seat of the car, you know, they kind of see maybe there's something different about me than someone else. And inevitably, I always get the question, can I talk to you about something? And many of these people have the same challenges and troubles that everyone else has, whether, you know, they've got a lot of money or a little bit of money. And so I've learned to not be intimidated by the nice clothes they wear or the nice home they have, all the people that are following them, because when they're away from all of that, they're just like everybody else, and they need, you know, they need Krishna consciousness just like everybody else does. So I wanted to share that experience with you.
Thank you. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.